This is Terry Crosby.
Andy Steiger.
Steve Kim.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Hello again, listeners. We're back for another week. Andy, Steve, you're back too.
We're here.
Hello.
Well, to start off this podcast, I got a few newspaper headlines for you.
All right, what do you got?
Newspaper article headlines. Death may ease tension. That's the headline.
Death may ease tension.
Yeah. What do you think? Is that true or not?
Well,
man arrested for everything. That's a lot of charges, I think.
You're not going to tell us anything about this article.
No.
All right.
It might explain more, like, once you start reading it, but these are just the headlines.
Man charged with everything.
Man arrested for everything.
Man arrested with everything.
Madonna reads second book. Okay, this is pretty good. PMS could be solar powered.
What?
these are just crazy. Hospitals resort to hiring doctors. Most earthquakes damage is caused by shaking. These are like things you'd find in different newspapers across the country. Yeah, I'm sure it explains more once you start, you know, reading the article. But
I gotta confess, I'm intrigued.
I know, they try to get the shortest title possible, but in that respect, they just mess it up.
Have you noticed in YouTube, one of the ways they get you is with these weird titles, but then they'll also put just a bizarre photo,
right?
You know, and you'll see it'll be like the photo will have nothing to do with the show, but it intrigues you. You're like, okay, why is this person walking a giant dog? I'm all of a sudden interested in this talk on politics.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, just a couple more. These are funny. Worker suffers leg pain after crane drops 800-pound ball on his head. Fish on drugs more likely to drop out of schools, study says.
Oh my God.
I don't even know what to make of that.
Oh man. Oh, that's a little humor there for us today before we get into some heavy stuff. But yeah, we want to interact with the heartbeat abortion bill that was just passed in the state of Georgia. But just before I do that, I just wanted to mention that this past week within Canada on May 9th, just this past week, was the 50th anniversary of legalized abortion in Canada. Campaign Life Coalition Vice President said, "We want abortion to be unthinkable in this country." On the eve of the National March for Life, Life Canada put out a poll as well as a release statement saying, currently there are no legal restrictions on abortion anytime during a pregnancy.
In Canada.
And their findings actually showed quite a low percentage of people really not engaging or thinking about the idea of abortion. So, I mean, some of the findings, they said 2% of Canadians support same-selection abortions, which usually target girls' babies. 8% support abortions after 6 months of pregnancy. So these lower percentages just showing people that are not – they have some reservations, I guess, on the whole idea of abortion. Michael Schutten, director of We Need a Law, he says, it's time for our politicians to lead the country in a national conversation about how to protect fetal rights while at the same time respecting women's rights. So people are it's been 50 years, but I think there might be a change in thought within our country as a whole.
You know, the statistics that you just cited, Terry, it just really flies in the face of the fact that Canada has no abortion laws. What's unfortunate is that a lot of Canadians, when you talk to them, they don't realize that we don't have any abortion laws. They think we have some restriction on abortion, and they're quite surprised when they hear we actually have no laws. Now, what I often find is the case is that as a matter of business practice, so some of these clinics won't offer abortions beyond a certain gestational age or whatever. And people take that to understand in Canada that there is some restriction, but legally speaking, there is no protection for the preborn whatsoever in Canada.
Which, by the way, Steve, is really startling when you realize that that's only true of Canada and North Korea.
Yeah, Canada, North Korea, China, and Vietnam, I believe, also has no abortion law. So we are the only Western liberal democracy without any laws on abortion. It's shameful, really.
Oh, it is shameful. And right. This is an interesting point that needs to be talked about, because there is a movie that just recently came out called Unplanned. This is a movie that details Abby Johnson, who once was a director at Planned Parenthood, and who ultimately, you see the story of her leaving Planned Parenthood and becoming against abortion after two things she said in particular really struck her. One was that they were being encouraged to, I believe it was double the number of abortions, so that they were, actively seeking to get people to abort their child. Now, that goes in the face of what they're supposed to do, because apparently in their mandate, the desire is for it to be rare. But, here they're being encouraged to up their numbers. So that bothered her. And then the second thing was she witnessed an abortion via an ultrasound. And watching this child struggle for life as it's being torn apart by a doctor forever changed her. This movie has been playing in the United States, and a lot of us in Canada have been thinking, okay, when's this movie going to come to Canada? But just recently in Ottawa, it was being discussed that the reason that this movie hasn't been playing in Canada is because Canadian movie distributors have de facto censored this movie, Unplanned. Now,
so not a single one is playing in a theater Canada.
Not a single one.
Wow. Yeah, there are only private screenings that are available. And I believe there was a private screening in Ottawa right when they were talking about bringing the movie up to Canada. And then just a couple days ago here in Edmonton, there was a private screening. So movie theaters have refused basically to take this on. I mean, their reason is that there are no Canadian distributors available. I even sent an email to Cineplex, and that was their response. There are no distributors available. So I think at this point, the only thing that we can do is private screenings. And so I think this is a place where different organizations like the churches, the local churches can step up and say, we'll show that movie at our church.
But it's quite concerning because they said it's not for a lack of consumer demand. They were quite clear. It's not that they're not showing it because they don't think they're going to make money if they showed it. It made $18 million in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
They're not showing it because they don't like the content. Now, think about that. Think about all the kinds of movies that get played in our cinemas and the kinds of content that we're okay with, right? But the content of this lady's journey out of Planned Parenthood, we're not okay as a nation with that content. Now, one of the things that I think is so important to bring up about this isn't the first time we've been dealing with these sorts of issues. Now, I know that we have listeners from around the world, but it's important to hear what's going on here in Canada on this specific issue. You see, because it was just recently, 2 years ago, guys, that the summer jobs grants came out. So we're into a new year this year. We're now able to file for funding. But the previous year, we couldn't unless we signed off on being okay with abortion.
Yeah, I think we should give people a bit more context here. So the summer jobs application thing, what it is that the government of Canada will sponsor certain internships. So different local businesses and organizations can apply for this grant, which will allow them to hire an intern.
Now, this is tax-funded grant.
Right. So a lot of organizations, including Northview Community Church, where you guys are currently based, depend on this grant to be able to hire interns, young workers, right?
To run things like summer camps and that sort of stuff.
Right. But what happened was the government basically came down saying, in order for your application to be even considered, you have to check this little box that says, you know, the core mandate of our organization affirms women's rights, including reproductive rights, which is basically code word for abortion. In other words, in order for your application to be even considered, you have to affirm abortion access. And so that became a huge problem because then a lot of organizations said, we can't in good conscience sign off on this, but we rely on this grant to be able to hire our interns, so on and so forth, which in effect they claimed was religious discrimination.
And this ultimately led to a number of lawsuits against the government. And thankfully, this year they have changed that. So we've dealt with a number of these sorts of issues. And one of the things that I was reflecting on, especially in light of what we're going to talk about today, is I think one of the reasons why Canada is doing this and has become so aggressive, I actually think it's because they are concerned. I think those people who support this policy are concerned that, just like you were stating there, Terry, the numbers are starting to turn against them. And we're watching in the United States right now as anti-abortion laws are sweeping across the nation. I think that that's really interesting. There's a turning that's taking place where people are opposing it. And I think what we're witnessing here in Canada is often reaction to the fact that it's not going well for them right now.
It seems like the population view is changing on things. And it seems like that's
particularly
happening
this topic.
This topic, even down in the States. So just this past week, the state of Georgia signed into law the heartbeat abortion bill. So it makes most abortions illegal after 6 weeks when the fetal heartbeat can be heard. But it does give some exemptions.
Very few, actually.
Very few. In case of rape or incest, a woman can have an abortion up to 20 weeks.
Now, which one is this? Because
this is Georgia.
Oh, okay. Georgia. This is Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just mentioning Georgia. And also,
because Alabama just did as well. Now, they put no exemptions.
No exemptions on that.
Except
one.
For if a woman's life is critically threatened.
Yeah. That's the second one here. If a woman's life is in danger, the law will allow her to have an abortion. So there's two exemptions. That's very few.
Now, to put this into perspective, already, anti-abortion laws have been put in place in Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, North Dakota, Iowa, and Georgia. And there's at least 61 bills like this that have been introduced across the country in states like Louisiana, Missouri, South Carolina, Tennessee, Maryland, Minnesota, Texas, and West Virginia. So that gives you a bit of a flavor of what's taking place.
And let's not forget that this also comes in the wake of, you know, New York passing the bill into law allowing abortion up to the moment of birth, just like in Canada. And I believe there was one that was put forward, a bill that was put forward in the state of Virginia that also sought to do something very similar. Now, I'm not sure if that has become law just yet, but I know they were talking about this at least just a few months ago. And so, in effect, what's happening is with the Supreme Court justice thing happening and whatnot, people are afraid that Roe v. Wade, that ruling that came in 1973 to legalize abortion across all 50 states, people are afraid that that might be overturned. Now, if that happens, the decision on abortion, that gets kicked back to the states, each individual state to deal with. And so in a lot of ways, what New York is doing, what Georgia and Alabama and all these other states are doing, they're in effect preparing for what might happen, namely the repealing of Roe v. Wade.
And let's talk about that, Steve. I think it's important that we talk about that because a lot of people maybe are surprised that this is all happening at once. But the reality is that this is strategic. They've been waiting for the Supreme Court to have sitting judges that they've got a better chance of appealing Roe versus Wade. So now what's taking place is, given the two Supreme Court judges that the Trump administration has put in place, there is a feeling that there's a good chance that this could be overturned. And so you've got these states that are putting these laws into place, and they're doing it for the specific purpose of driving this to the Supreme Court. So you have states like Alabama, who's quite upfront about the fact that they're not putting any, you know, regulations on the anti-abortion law, such as rape, incest, or anything like that. And the reason is because they want it to be just as clear-cut as possible to drive this straight to the Supreme Court, which is looking like that's exactly what's going to happen, as counter, you know, suits are already been put in place. Because ultimately, that's the end game, is to see this being overturned.
I think more discussion will happen in Canada as well, just because our government might change here in the next few months.
And I think that that's what's worrying people who are trying to keep that policy in place, is I think they're seeing if that changes in the United States, that's going to put a lot of pressure on Canada.
On Canada as well, yeah.
Steve, what do you think? This is something that's more of your wheelhouse. So what are your thoughts with all this?
Now, if I may just make a quick correction there, Andy, in the case of Canada, we don't actually have a policy on abortion. What we have is lack of law. So let's just turn back the clock. When Canada was founded and we wrote our own criminal code, abortion was criminalized, and we just took it from the English common law, which said that when the mother was quickened, that is to say, if at the first moment that the mother could sense the baby moving in her womb, now this unborn child was coming under legal protection. Now, it was Justin Trudeau's father, the current Prime Minister's father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who first legalized it back in 1969, May 14th, 1969. What happened was, what he did basically was, if the mother's life is in danger, then she can get three doctors to sign off on it, then she can get an abortion done for therapeutic reasons, for medical reasons, that is. Now, in 1986, Henry Morgenthaler, the infamous abortionist in Canada, along with a couple others, challenged it, saying that this puts undue pressure on women. And so this is not constitutional. We need to strike it down. And in 1988, the R.V. Morgenthaler decision came down, basically removing all laws around abortion. Now, this was originally sort of kicked back to the parliament. Now, here's the interesting thing. A lot of people complain about the fact that here are these old white men deciding, you know, what women can and can't do with their bodies. So in other words, if you're a man, then you have no say on abortion. Now, if we were to follow that line of reasoning, we would have to repeal Roe v. Wade, because it was decided by a panel of all male judges. And in Canada, too, at that time, that R.V. Morgenthaler decision, the only female justice was Bertha Wilson. And even she said the parliament has to create laws balancing the state's vested interest in protecting the unborn child and women's right. And so what we have in Canada is a lack of laws, not a positive right to abortion access. Now, with respect to what's going on in Alabama and Georgia, I think one thing that is really important to understand is that, because there is this fear around it, right? When these laws come into effect, women will be punished for miscarriages and different things like that. If you look at the bills in Georgia and in Alabama, they're very clear that the woman is not liable for criminal prosecution or civil prosecution or anything like that. Instead, it is the abortionist, the medical professional performing the abortion, that will be held liable. Now, that has been traditionally, historically, the case for no other reason than they needed the woman's testimony to prosecute the abortionist, basically. And so they often let the mother off or give her some very light sentence instead of something really heavy, like what Alabama is proposing, is you can be jailed for up to 99 years.
That's a great point, Stephen. Definitely appreciate that. The thing, though, that I'm getting at here is, in Canada, there tends to be this view where you're pointing out exactly right. There is no law, but we've kind of built in this kind of de facto, law, or it's clearly not a law, but this de facto idea that this is acceptable. Because it's interesting that the government wants to, and you got this, you know, in Canada in general, this desire to try to preserve this practice that has no law, but yet is seen in society as acceptable, where now this is being questioned with regards to, you know, is this acceptable? And it's fascinating that where we would, you know, as a culture go so far as to say, you are not allowed to watch a movie that challenges this position, such as Unplanned. Again, I think anybody living in Canada or wherever you're living right now, these sorts of things that are going on should concern you. I mean, for how much we get concerned for places like China and whatnot that get censored, and you think, oh, how terrible that is. I'm so glad I don't live in China or I don't live in North Korea. A very similar secular censorship is taking place right here. And here's something that I think so important, that's a message that Christians in particular, people of faith, need to appreciate. You can do something about this. And more than that, I would say you need to do, you must do something about this.
So that was a little snapshot of Canada. Steve, I'm just wondering, do you know kind of the historical aspect of Roe versus Wade down in the States? That came together in 1973, is that correct?
Yeah, that came down in 1973. Here's a little known fact. I mean, within some pro-life activist groups, circles, this is pretty well known, but the general public may not be aware. Now, the Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade, her real name is Norma McCorvey. She was a 21-year-old woman at the time. She already had a daughter. She was pregnant with the second one, and she was seeking a legal abortion in Texas, which wasn't available at the time. And so these two lawyers came, and basically, as Norma McCorvey herself says later, these two lawyers basically exploited her story to push forward their agenda. Now, Norma McCorvey later became a pro-life activist. She only just recently passed away, but she became a pro-life activist and worked for the rest of her life to overturn the law that bears her name. And she had three daughters, and she's never had an abortion. On top of that, you may have heard the name Bernard Nathanson. He's the co-founder of NARAL, this lobbying group down in the United States that seeks to repeal all abortion laws, basically to have what we have in Canada here, right? He was involved in the Roe v. Wade thing. He later became a pro-life activist as well, and he wrote in his autobiography that some of the stats that they came up with were completely fabricated. For example, they said 85% of the United States citizens support abortion access when they knew at the time that that was only about 5% in actuality. And they also said they inflated the numbers of women who died from unsafe procedures, which totaled on average about a few hundred per year, but they inflated the numbers up to 10,000 per year. And he basically confessed in his autobiography, yep, those were completely fabricated. So by all accounts, the Roe v. Wade ruling was just a really terribly decided kind of a ruling.
Now, here's something else that I think a lot of Canadians probably are unfamiliar with. With regards to the Liberal government here in Canada, you have to toe the party line with regards to abortion. There's no option.
Yeah, that's because our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is a very, very vocal proponent of abortion access. In some ways, that's understandable, because if you think about it, that's his father's legacy. He probably wants to protect that, which I can appreciate. But it has come out, it was reported in the news, that he basically told his party members, if you don't support abortion access, then you have no place in this party.
I want to just clarify that Apologetics Canada is a nonpartisan organization. Again, we are nonpartisan. However, it becomes very tricky to know when you're seeking to be fair on these sorts of things, because some people will be, you know, push back on us and we'll say, but yeah, but you know, in the Conservative Party, you can actually have an opinion on these sorts of things. In the Liberal Party, you cannot have an opinion on these sorts of things. It really challenges how, you know, you interact with policy and seek to be nonpartisan when you've got this sort of thing going on in the Liberal Party.
And we got to remember that we're talking about a specific issue here, right? And so for those listeners who support the Liberal Party, I mean, there might be other policies that we can really get on board with, right? We're not writing
off. I'm specifically talking about abortion here.
Right. And some of the unhealthy things that are happening, like the whipping of the members into line to push forward your particular agenda or that sort of thing.
Which, by the way, was interesting. We had at our Apologetics Canada conference this year, Rachel Harder, who's an MP from Lethbridge. And, you know, here's this woman who's an MP that has a view on abortion and ultimately was not allowed to become the minister of, what was it, women's...
Yeah, she was nominated for the chair position for the Committee on the Status of Women.
Yeah, Status of Women.
As far as I understand, she was supposed to be confirmed by her colleagues, and that was supposed to be, technically speaking, she can be turned down. But traditionally, the practice is that the confirmation process is very much a formality thing. When she was put forward as the potential chair of the committee, her Liberal and NDP, New Democratic Party colleagues, as I understand the story, just walked out of the room in protest of having a pro-life MP nominated to the chair position.
So now because of that, she's just the shadow minister to the Committee of Status for Women, which again, is incredibly frustrating with what's going on here in Canada.
I know this is a pretty dear topic to your heart there, Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve's wheelhouse.
This is Steve's wheelhouse for sure. When you interact with those that oppose you, what is kind of the most common objection that they give to you that is directed at you?
Right. A lot of the times, the most common thing I hear is, you know, the grandfather of all pro-choice slogans, right? My body, my choice. Why can't the woman do with her body as she chooses to? But the deeper issue is that when you talk to them, all of the objections assume, all of the popular objections anyway, assume that the unborn child is not a human person, right? Because if they actually conceded that, yes, this is a human being entitled to human rights, then they can't be making the kinds of objections that they do make. And so, for example, I hear, you know, my body, my choice. And of course, the reply from the pro-life crowd is, well, it's not her body, because if it were her body, the mother would be the one dying through the process of abortion. You know, those kinds of things. Now, with the recent Alabama law coming into effect, what I'm seeing most frequently are some stories of women who died due to some kind of pregnancy complications or something like that. The one that I hear frequently is there was this woman named Savita in Ireland, and she was refused abortion, and she died because of sepsis that she had. Now, that, as far as I understand, played a very critical role in changing the political opinion in Ireland that was, up until very recently, a pro-life country, right? They had that Eighth Amendment, which protected the preborn child. That was repealed just recently, and that story had a huge impact. Now, those kinds of things I hear very often. And so there is this real fear around women being persecuted and getting hurt and dying because of the lack of abortion access. Of course, when you actually look into this, the Savita story, what I understand is that it was actually, the reason that she died was more due to the fact that the hospital mismanaged, they didn't follow protocol to catch the sepsis early enough. That was the problem that led to her death. And then, as the story goes, the pro-choice crowd basically exploited that to push their agenda. Then when you talk to OBGYNs, like Dr. Anthony Levitino, he was an OBGYN who performed 1,200 abortions. He is now a pro-life advocate, and he says, as a practicing OBGYN, I can tell you that there's never an instance where you need to have an abortion to save the mother's life. Often, when you do a C-section, you can save both the child and the mother and those kinds of things. But just to, again, to quickly summarize my answer, that's the kind of stuff that I hear most often is, you know, what about the mothers? You know, what about the plight that they'll be put into because of these laws?
It's interesting to go back to this idea of the humanization of the child. You know, we've talked a lot in this show about dehumanization, and that is absolutely the driving force that allows abortion to take place. And the way that that's done is you simply within these laws or within the medical field, you don't talk about a child, you don't talk about a baby, you talk about a fetus, you talk about tissue and
clump
more
of cells.
So, yeah, clump of cells. And more so these days, you don't even talk about the child at all. You just talk about ending a pregnancy. And this sort of dehumanizing language makes it very easy and much more palatable, the practice that's taking place. But it's interesting that one of the areas where the pro-life movement is really done well, and you see this with areas like people like Ben Shapiro, he does a really good job in those debates he does to bring people back to this idea that we're talking about a human being. And one of the things that, Steve, I remember you telling me a story of when this lady, with regards to the movie Unplanned, she apparently was down in New York and did a live ultrasound.
Yeah, so there was a pro-life rally that was organized right in Times Square, actually, one of the busiest intersections in all of the United States and, you know, quite possibly in North America, right? So they had this pro-life rally. Now, we should remember that this is the state that now has the law that allows abortion up to the moment of birth, right? So they're having this rally in that context in Times Square. And Abby Johnson, who is the subject of the movie Unplanned, she was part of that rally. Now, when this was happening, there were pro-choice protesters all around the place chanting their slogans and, you know, yelling at the pro-lifers and all kinds of things. Somebody who was actually there wrote this piece, and he said it was fascinating to observe that all of these yelling and everything just stopped the moment they started doing this 4D ultrasound on Abby Johnson. Abby Johnson is currently pregnant.
Okay, and so they then put that up on the big screen?
Yeah, they couldn't do it on the big screen like that you have on these buildings or whatever, because again, the owners of these big screens that you see on buildings, they refused to have this done on their screen. So they just, the pro-life group that organized this brought out a jumbotron. And so it's much smaller, but it's still large enough for everyone to see. And they saw Abby Johnson's unborn child in her womb in 4D, right? And as that was going on, this hush fell over the crowd. And as this person who wrote the article says, you could hear a pin drop while that was happening. And that was a very profound moment.
Steve, on that note, I think as we kind of wrap this up, this would be a good spot to just address, maybe there is a couple that's listening to this or a lady that's listening to this that has gone through an abortion. Steve, what would you say to them, to her?
Yeah, I'm getting really emotional here as I'm thinking about this, but I just want to tell people who actually underwent abortion, I can't say that I understand what you've gone through. You obviously had your own reason, whatever it might have been, to have done what you have done. But I just want to affirm that you are still valuable in God's eyes, and there is nothing that God cannot forgive. Many of the leading voices in the pro-life movement are post-abortive parents like yourselves, who have found some degree of redemption through what they consider to be an act of penance by speaking up for those children that can't speak up for themselves. What's done is done. We cannot bring your child back, but what you can do is let your story be heard so that other children might be protected, so that other children don't have to go through what your child had to go through.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate that. And thank you for your part that you do in this. I mean, you have made this an issue for yourself and have gone out there and interacted. But I believe each one of us can do the same thing as well and be active in this on this issue.
As simple as voting.
Yes, that's right. And that's coming up very soon.
It is.
Well, thank you for joining us, listeners. The AC Podcast is a Ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more things to think about.